From WUOT News, this is The Method, a series exploring the intersection of science and society. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth. In a few moments, parakeets may pick their alpha by fighting for the title. But first, Tennessee's state park rangers aren't in the business just because they get to wear cool hats. Many of them are trained in natural sciences, such as biology or geology. Recently, I visited with a ranger at Fall Creek Falls State Park in Van Buren County. He told me how he shares his love of science with the public.
There's a man that's going to tell me what I've asked everybody since I've been here.
What have you asked everybody since you've been here?
Is the reservoir man-made?
It is. It was put in 1968.
My name is Matt Brown. I'm a park ranger for Fall Creek Falls State Park.
No, it is not. It was actually put here to help Fall Creek Falls flow during the summertime.
I've been doing this for about 16 years. I came to this park to do environmental education, to work with the environmental education program we have here, have a degree in biology. And after spending a few years here, a couple of seasons, I decided that this is what I wanted to do as a career. And the best career opportunities in state parks at that time were to be a state park ranger. So I went ahead and pursued full-time employment as a park ranger.
And the park was reopened as a resort park in 72.
And all of our programs are designed to relay some interpretive theme about the park to the visitor.
Mm-hmm. To supply towns for water,
Some of our school groups have children that do ask some pretty tough questions. I've actually had some of the most difficult questions asked by fourth graders. Seems like they tend to be really interested in the program, really interested in what they're learning, not so interested in each other.
On that little ledge looking down, ooh, yeah, okay.
what little ledge were you looking at?
Over on this side.
Over at Cane Creek Falls?
Yes. And they got this.
It's very tough to address issues that deal with time. Time is always tough. Try to address time, geologic time, that sort of thing, and a non-specific, very general format. This took a long time, and this didn't, and leave it at that when dealing with the public, because it's easy to walk into an area that's hard to deal with sometimes.
We're doing great. Now, what are we missing now?
You know, when I address those issues, I don't say it's 350 million years old. I say it's older than the other stuff around it. You know, I put everything in a relative format so that it doesn't really, we don't have to cross that barrier. Once you cross into the arena where somebody doesn't believe you anymore, doesn't like what you have to say, you lose it, and you can't get the most important aspects of what you're trying to relay to them, that this is a special area and this is something we want to protect and this is something that can't be replaced, or you know, those types of things are the most important things. And you know, we don't need to let geologic time interfere with that.
We're at the Betty Dunn Nature Center, named after Betty Dunn, which is the Governor Winfield's Dunn's wife.
Okay.
One thing that you have to do is you have to stay current with what is in the headlines. You have to try to keep up with what's trending. But actually, I get very few comments about climate change. It's I couldn't tell you why. Just not addressed much.
Occasionally,
that's my job, is to watch for bear. You saw the deer outside. That old deer I planted.
I really was interested in biology and teaching and that sort of thing, but I think ultimately the most satisfying part of my job is just being able to be out here and help people. I do like the public service aspect of it.
There's also the one-way drive. I don't know if you
we did that. Yes.
Oh
my.
What do you think about milk?
None blue red displays none red red. None red red displays none blue blue.
The human voice you hear in the background right now is that of Elizabeth Hobson. She's a researcher from the University of Tennessee's National Institute for Mathematical and Biological Synthesis. The high-pitched sound? Well, that's the noise monk parakeets make when they're fighting. Hobson tells WUOT's Matt Schaefer-Powell her research suggests these highly social parakeets use fighting and a complicated process of analyzing the fights to identify the head parakeet.
These aggression events are really quick. They happen in less than a second.
What do they look like? What happens?
Yeah, if you think of two birds sitting on a perch, and the bird maybe on the left is looking at the bird on the right and wants to take that bird's spot. And so the bird on the left will kind of inch over and then smack the bird on the right. And then that bird will actually leave the area, and the bird on the left then becomes the winner and takes that guy's spot.
None red red displaced none blue blue. None red red is getting attacked by none blue.
So what's happening here?
This is a lot of aggression happening at kind of all at the same time. And so I actually marked them by drawing all over them with Sharpie markers.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's the three color combinations that are on their head, their cheeks, and their neck. And so Nun Blue Red then is the most dominant bird in this one group and was the top ranked bird. And he is aggressing a lot against this other bird, Nun Red Red, and coming over and, you know, doing this kind of smacking, biting behavior to move Nun Red Red actually physically away from wherever it was sitting.
After you've observed them for a little while, are you able to predict where they are going to be on the social hierarchy?
So you would think that a bigger parakeet would have, you know, a higher rank. In these guys, the rank is not predicted at all by body size. It's really interesting because it looks like it's a much more complicated process and that they're really using the social information where they're remembering how they're interacting with the individuals that they're fighting with, but they're also watching how other individuals in their group are fighting with each other. And they're kind of putting together this puzzle and connecting the dots between individuals to try to figure out their own rank.
If you're kind of a middle-of-the-road parakeet,
mm-hmm.
you know you're a middle-of-the-road parakeet because you're observing the behavior of the other parakeets around you? Is that how you know?
Right. That's one of the kind of new things that's emerging from this work is that, you know, we looked at how they establish the rank, what they understand about the rank, and then we kind of started to investigate how they could possibly start piecing this together. Because trying to figure out your rank in a really chaotic system like this is really tricky. You know, I was really impressed with their abilities. You know, they really seem to be paying attention to this and really processing the information in ways that we didn't expect.
Examining these bird populations and trying to figure out how they establish dominance, what does it matter?
Humans have the highest social complexity and cognitive complexity of any species. And so it's a really interesting comparative system for looking at these questions of, you know, how did complex sociality and complex cognition evolve in a species that is very obviously not closely related to us?
Elizabeth Hobson, thanks so much for coming and talking to us about these birds today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was fun.
Thanks for joining us on this edition of The Method. Our program archive is on iTunes and online at WUOT.org. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth. Thank you.